Welcome to the UUSM Connections podcast. This is a podcast devoted to the Unitarian Universalist of San Mateo. I'm Jack Brennan, UUSM Connections. This is the second of two podcast episodes about Pride. Today's episode is about the overwhelming amount of anti-trans legislation that states are dealing with this year alone. There is a through line that goes from the Shelby County case that gutted the Voting Rights Act, then through Obergefell v. Hodges, the case that made marriage equality the law of the land, right through to the Dobbs case that overturned Roe v. Wade just about 1 year ago. Last week, we talked about the legal history of marriage equality, which basically took us to the point where the Supreme Court said in Obergefell that same-sex marriage was the law of the land. If you haven't listened to that podcast yet, it's okay. You can enjoy this podcast without listening to part one, although I'm not really sure you're going to enjoy this podcast. I still want to recommend listening to last week's podcast, though. There is a war on transgender rights. These bills run the gamut from laws that restrict gender-affirming care, trans bathrooms, laws that restrict the First Amendment in terms of drag performances, laws that make it impossible for kids to learn about or discuss or express their own gender identity without state harassment and maybe even state surveillance. How quickly this has happened and how it interferes with even the so-called conservative values of family autonomy, education autonomy, privacy, and free expression is mind-boggling. Someday, these cases will be coming to the Supreme Court. And when they do, they will not be about what is actually happening. They will be filled with lies purporting to be facts and, of course, the big money behind those lies. Chase Strangio is the ACLU's Deputy Director for Transgender Justice. A lot of the information I'm providing comes from them and from the ACLU. The first thing we're going to address is why this mass of transphobic laws in state legislatures is happening right now across the country. There are a lot of reasons, of course, but I'm going to focus mostly on Supreme Court-related reasons for this podcast, at least at first. There really are through lines between at least three Supreme Court cases and what's happening today in terms of deprivation of trans rights. One of those cases is Shelby County v. Holder. This was the case where the court gutted the Voting Rights Act. It's also the case where Ruth Bader Ginsburg was given the pop culture moniker of the notorious RBG, but that's a story for another day. The gutting of the Voting Rights Act in the Shelby County case meant that counties and states with a history of voter suppression based on race and other factors no longer had to get prior approval for discriminatory voting laws. For sure, the most consequential result of this case was the 2016 presidential election. Shelby County was decided in 2013, and it opened the floodgates to laws restricting voting throughout the country. Republican state legislatures were able to use the combination of restricting voting rights and redistricting to solidify large majorities for decades to come. Legislatures in red states have moved further and further to the right in the 10 years since Shelby County was decided. Then, of course, there was Obergefell, the big marriage equality case that we talked about last week. That case created a huge backlash. The backlash shifted quickly from same-sex marriage to trans people. starting in 2016. In the Trump years, of course, that backlash shift to trans people grew. And two other factors that matter. One is the Dobbs case, that case that overturned Roe v. Wade last year. The post-Dobbs reality, the sort of, from the rights point of view, yay, we won, no more abortions. Now what do we do? This was actually a crisis point for the right. The Dobbs case was the cause of that crisis, even though they were happy, of course, about the outcome in Dobbs. But the other factor is the political one. They needed a new issue to rally around to lead up to the 2024 election. The midterm elections in 2022 showed the far right that they needed some social issue to focus on because talking about abortion was no longer working for them. Trans people were seen by the right as a perfect choice, a perfect foil. Anti-trans rhetoric had slowly been entering the political arena. When I think of anti-trans rhetoric, of course, there are a million examples, but I think of what Ted Cruz said at, I think it was at CPAC when he was introduced. He said, "Hello, my name is Ted Cruz, and my pronouns are kiss my ass." Yeah. Transphobic legislation also had been slowly expanding, starting with bathroom bills a few years ago, moving on to sports, to classroom censorship, to healthcare, and now we're looking at outright criminalization of the very existence of trans folks. This was a post-Dobbs shift that we mostly just did not see coming. The right sees trans people as their winning issue for 2024. According to the ACLU's Deputy Director of Transgender Litigation, anytime you see a shift to the right, which we are seeing globally, a rightward shift in governmental structures, there is almost always an emphasis on controlling the families, the body, and self-determination. Globally, we're seeing attacks on trans people and trans rights in far-right countries. There's a fixation on trans people. There's this idea that the rejection of the trans binary is some sort of threat to fascism, to governmental control of citizens. Where does trans legislation come from? Most people think that when a state legislature decides the state needs a law about something, I mean, we know how a bill becomes a law because we watch Schoolhouse Rock about, I'm just a bill. So there are our state legislatures talking about how we can make a needed change. And they start writing and debating among themselves about how the law should read. Let's say they want to make a law against pickleball being played on Thursdays. I think we can all agree, there's way too much pickleball on Thursdays. The legislatures have been getting a lot of calls from constituents around the state complaining about pickleball on Thursdays. I mean, pickleball is fine on other days, but come on, not on Thursdays. The legislators get to work. The law ends up reading, in this state, there shall be no pickleball play on any Thursday. And they're high-fiving each other because they've solved a serious problem brought to them by their constituents. Yeah, this is a silly example, I know. But the point is, that's how legislation works, right? A lot of voters think there's a problem, and they tell lawmakers who then work to solve the problem by writing and passing laws. It all starts with a grassroots movement among the citizens, right? It's safe to assume then that even though you and I might not have seriously thought about the very serious threat of having trans people in bathrooms, come to think of it, this is about as ridiculous as my pickleball on Thursday example, other people were clearly worried about this. That's how it works, right? Grassroots, baby. No, there's no grass here. There's no roots. There's no dirt. This is AstroTurf, all the way. Anti-trans legislation comes from not your state legislators, but from well-funded global organizations that come together to identify ways to draft what is called model legislation. No voter asked for this. No legislature took the time to see what constituents thought or to think about the wording or the consequences. Nope. These organizations create this model legislation and then they box it up and send it out to the red state legislatures to enact. It's ready to take to the floor. It's all done. Then those same organizations position litigation in the courts. These groups include organizations like the Heritage Foundation, the Alliance Defending Freedom, and even Stephen Miller is in there now with his America First Legal, and this group called Promise to America's Children. Come on, Promise to America's Children, y'all. Why do you hate America's children? All right, Promise to America's Children was drafting model legislation for states, shipping it out to the states, positing trans people as a threat to America's children. Of course, we've seen this time and again. If you can make something a threat, especially to white women and white children, then that alone is enough of a driving force to guarantee passage of the legislation. The anti-trans bathroom ban bills started coming out right after the Obergefell same-sex marriage decision in 2015. First, it focused on bathrooms. Like, do you want men in your wife's bathroom? In your daughter's bathroom? No constituent asked for this because it wasn't a problem. Good thing all those organizations were there to tell our legislatures that it was not only a huge problem, but this model legislation was going to be a huge political win too. A promise to America's children. Those organizations drafted all that legislation in order to shift the public discourse. And it did. And it began to convince not only people on the far right and the center right, but also those on the center left, especially the center left media, and especially with its next target after bathrooms, trans people in sports. These trans athletes are coming to take your daughter's spot on whatever sport she plays. It's unfair. How are we supposed to compete if these trans athletes are on the field? Dahlia Lithwick, who covers the courts and the Supreme Court for Slate, talked about this. The way in which the right was able to draw in the center left under the idea that trans women and girls were a threat to women and girls in sports. It is ridiculous that anyone was able to fall victim to this opportunistic and untrue set of political pieces of rhetoric, and yet they were. We had so many people who said, well, isn't it true that transgender people really do have an unfair advantage in sports? I mean, they're really men, right? Do you want your daughter playing against men on her high school team? what this talk did was to allow that rhetorical anxiety to fuel this legislation in states. According to the ACLU, we went from one state in 2020 passing one anti-trans sports bill to almost half the states in the country passing anti-trans sports bills by the beginning of 2022. That was the opening. It was never about sports. It was never about, do you want this man taking your daughter's spot on her college basketball team? It was about the erosion of bodily autonomy and allowing for an entry point to criminalization and an assault on trans existence that inexorably led to the creation and distribution of model legislation on, are you ready? Trans healthcare. So how did it get to healthcare? Well, it's all about our children. It was about pushing this idea that children were being threatened by experimental medicine that was being put into people's mind in this rhetoric of contagion on social media that nobody has bodily autonomy and nobody has agencies and parents and doctors are part of a grand conspiracy to make everyone trans. There's an argument that this anti-trans healthcare piece almost required the COVID pandemic, where people worldwide started developing this huge mistrust of medical science. This systemic mistrust of doctors and parents and maybe even teachers is an outgrowth of COVID. Mistrust of medicine and also a mistrust of schools. The hypocrisy is that another outgrowth of COVID is the whole parental rights over their children. But really, it's an erosion into the rights of parents. Kids can't get medical treatment without parental consent, but now the state is coming in and overriding medical decisions, even when the children, the parents, and the doctors all agree about critically needed medical care. This is the story being told, and they were so effective in their use of right-wing media, model legislation, and their use of the center-left media to create this sense that there was some crisis that the states needed to interrupt. This is important to understand. Think about it. As a society, at the start of 2020, it was unimaginable that a state could categorically ban healthcare that was tested by and accepted by every major medical association and relied on by transgender and non-binary people. From that being unimaginable in 2020, we went in 3 years to now in 2023, we have 21 states that have completely banned gender-affirming healthcare. And most of those banned it in this year. According to the ACLU, this year, which we are only halfway through, the landscape of trans healthcare has been catastrophically eroded. By July 1st this year, just a few weeks away, when bans in two more states go into effect, we will have so many states cutting off this vital medical care because of a completely false narrative and because of all this model legislation that was dreamt up and sent out across the country, all based on lies. And yeah, Texas and Florida have done more than their share on this. It's become a joke, right? A friend of mine reached out to tell me that she was in a really bad state. I said, I'm sorry, Texas or Florida? They're the worst on trans rights, but they're not alone. There are more conservative state legislators than progressive ones in the United States. anti-trans rhetoric and legislation has gone, according to Dahlia Lithwick, in a compressed timeline from minor civil penalties to criminalization, and now even vigilantism and surveillance. In some of these laws, the threat is to take away custody because seeking gender-affirming care is evidence of felony child abuse. Do you remember SB 8? It first showed up in Texas, but on the shadow docket, the U.S. Supreme Court said it was fine, all legal. SB 8 says that anybody in Texas can sue anyone who gets an abortion in Texas, and anybody can also sue anyone who helps, also known as aids and abets, that person that is seeking that medical care. So if you ask me to keep your kids so that you can get an abortion that day, I can be sued. The Uber driver who drops you off at the clinic can be sued. In fact, don't bother giving the Uber driver the address to a Planned Parenthood clinic. Even if you're just going there for advice or contraceptives, they won't take you. Give them a close by address and walk a block or two. Your mom loaned you money for the medical procedure? Then she can be sued too. And now states are using and weaponizing that SB 8 aiding and abetting language in this gender-affirming care arena. Any parent who is providing gender-affirming care to their child is subject to investigation by the state because, well, of course they are. But wait, there's more. If a parent takes their child to a different state to get that care, that might be child abuse. If parents just look on the internet for ways to get affirming care or how they can support their trans child, that might also get you investigated. Taking your child to a drag queen story hour? Yeah, what were you thinking? But the state can't know everything. So the state essentially deputizes anyone in the general public to turn people in and tell the state about it, or file their own civil lawsuits in some cases. Did your son visit the home of a neighbor and notice that their son had Barbie dolls? You got yourself a lawsuit. It's actually worse than that. Under some of these laws, any person who even sees the potential for a child getting gender-affirming health care can have criminal liability if they don't report it to the state. Let that sink in. According to the ACLU's Deputy Director of Transgender Litigation, the ACLU has been able to block implementation to many of these laws so far, especially about the healthcare piece, even with conservative courts through preliminary injunctions. Keep in mind that trans people are being used right now as an entry point to be able to have laws that strip bodily autonomy for more and more people. This does not end with trans children. It does not end with trans adults. It does not end with 2024. Right now, there is a big move in the Republican Party to have a federal abortion ban, although they are being careful not to call it a ban, but rather a limit. Not a ban. A ban is harsh, but a limit? That's wise. It would set a time limit of 12 weeks or 13 weeks or 15 weeks for all states. All states in the country. The same will soon be true for gender-affirming health care for minors, a federal law. We want to believe we're safe from such laws in California, but we aren't. We can't just say these laws are bad without calling out the lies on which they are based. The lie at the basis of all this anti-trans litigation is the lie that being trans or non-binary is a fad. It's just become popular because of the liberal media and liberal social media that's created pressures on young people to become transgender. Trans people, it's important to say, are not created by social media or social pressure to be trans, when we know that from birth there's an almost overwhelming imperative to be cisgender and heterosexual. In Pride Month and every month, we should recognize the stigma and discrimination against just being queer in this country, even with all the progress that's been made. And that's from the Deputy Director of Transgender Litigation at the ACLU. If you're wishing you could do something, support organizations like the ACLU. The ACLU is fighting for transgender rights on so many fronts right now. They are doing heroic work, and there's plenty of work to be done. Keep making connections.